Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What does an 18-year veteran of the tech industry and a 20-year veteran of the military have in common? More than you might think. Welcome, everyone, to the Second Act podcast, leveling up your life's journey. Welcome back to the Second Act podcast with Michael and John. How are you doing today, John?
It is a great week, and I'm being inundated for some reason or another with a lot of people who are succeeding after some failures and some setbacks and more failures and difficulties. And so it's really encouraging to hear some of these success stories. I don't know if it's just on my personal feed on LinkedIn or, you know, some of the social media that I'm seeing, but it's really well timed because, as you know, and some of our audience knows, we're both in our second acts and we're both trying new things and succeeding at some, failing at others, and discovering our talents. But man, this week I've been blessed to hear some of these success stories of people just grinding it out. And then all of a sudden they get their breakthrough moment and are just seeing the upside, tremendous upside of their efforts. And so it's really cool. And I think it's going to tie into today's episode perfectly. But yeah, how are you doing, man?
Good. And coincidentally, I was watching this documentary on Netflix. Folks who have been following us for a while know that I like Netflix and I like documentaries. But it's this movie or film called Mission Joy, Finding Happiness in Troubled Times. And it's with the Dalai Lama and the Archbishop Desmond Tutu, two very spiritual, well-known spiritual leaders in the world, sitting down and doing this Q&A. And there's just some fascinating comments in there regarding inner peace, and that's, you have to have that to be compassionate for others. And they also sort of touch on suffering and suffering, you know, to whatever degree that is oftentimes a requirement of the process to finding joy and happiness and meaning in your life and getting to those things that you wanted to reach. And so it's awesome to hear that whatever degree of suffering or pain or hustle your contacts and community were going through, now they're on the other side of that. And as a result of that suffering, you have a greater appreciation for that process and the things that you have to go through, man, to get to where you want to go.
That's good.
I recommend everyone watch it if they have, like, I think it's like an hour and a half long. It's really fascinating discussion. But with that said, I am super excited to introduce a guest of ours, also a friend who's local here to Colorado. In this week's episode, we're joined by Eric Ballaruno, a corporate executive turned entrepreneur who immigrated to the U.S. from Uganda and has called Denver home for the last 25 years. Eric has spent the last 20 years serving a wide range of companies to helping them level up their finance and accounting operations through his leadership. He's had a lifelong goal of becoming an entrepreneur, and that dream has been his since childhood. This dream was realized last year by becoming a franchise owner of Zoom Drain, a residential commercial drain and sewer services company. So if you live in the Denver area, you may have seen some of his red and blue trucks zipping around town. Eric mentioned in some of the notes that we were exchanging prior to kicking off here that this company and brand aligned with his core value of service to others. So we're looking forward to getting into this more later in the discussion. But in addition to franchise ownership, Eric also selectively takes on contract and finance and accounting work through his consultancy to help maintain his CPA license, which I'm sure comes in handy now that he's running his own business. And outside of work, Eric is a sports and fitness enthusiast, enjoying an opportunity to stay in shape. His preferred sports are soccer and rugby, but also has picked up a love for golf. And he enjoys going to concerts, sporting events, and discovering great restaurants. So a bit of a foodie. So welcome to the show, welcome. Eric.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for that intro. Really excited to be a part of this and, part of your journeys as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We're so thankful that you're joining our community and sharing your story with our community, Eric. And with that said, I'll let John kick us off here.
Eric, welcome to the show. And I got to start with probably the most obvious question I think a lot of our listeners are going to ask. But Uganda, right, to Denver today. So give me a little bit of that transition. Tell me about your early life in the early central part of Africa and some of the important childhood memories that helped shape who you are today.
Yeah, no, thank you. I grew up in Uganda. I actually moved here when I was close to 22. Seven siblings, so big family, right? And bigger extended family. So, but you may be surprised to know that even though I had seven siblings, I didn't spend that much time with them. You see, back home, education is very important. It's key. Right. And the best schools back home are boarding schools. Right. So parents take their kids to boarding school as early as first grade, believe it or not. So I was one of those kids that went to boarding schools. I went to all boys Catholic boarding schools from first grade all the way through high school. So imagine just being gone from home 9 months out of the year. Oof. Right? It's like 3 semesters of close to 3 months and you only get to see your parents or your family that can visit you once or twice in a semester. Right? So I can actually remember the first day my dad dropped me off, I was 7, maybe 8 years old. And the school I went to, this was for primary school, was on top of a hill. And you could see the road, coming up to the school from the top. You could see the cars coming up and leaving. So I'm standing just at the top, on a balcony, a classroom balcony. And I can see my dad drive off and take off. I'm 7 years old, right? And all right. Well, I guess it's time to go to school, right? But I know there are boarding schools here in America, but I'm not sure how similar they are to Ugandan boarding schools. But I'll tell you this: boarding schools are tough. Right, it's tough. They're strict. You know, the day-to-day life is structured. Discipline is enforced. Right, so you get spanked by the staff. Right, more than you can ever be spanked by your own parents. Right, but in boarding school, there's not so much to do besides education, going to school, going to classrooms. But you you get to pick up sports. Right, that's kind of like the pastime is sports. So, I joined, I enjoyed soccer. So I started kicking the ball around early, and with my teammates. But, I loved other sports too. I played basketball, tennis, ping pong, volleyball. Yeah. And then later on, as I grew bigger, I picked up rugby, which I enjoyed loving very much. But I was lucky to be athletic, that, whatever I picked up, I did well. So I was never bored, right, in school. But, you know, you create those lifelong friendships, those brothers to this day. You know, I know kids that I've known for over for almost 40 years, right? And wow. And they're still my great friends. But what boarding school teaches you is to work hard, right? You work hard. I mean, punishment is about working. Like, you go do chores when you know, to be punished, you do chores. So you learn to work hard, you learn to be resilient, to be tough, right? You got to fend for yourself. You know, it's all boys, yeah. and you know, you got to find your space, right? But you know, you learn discipline, right? You get disciplined. You know what you need to do within a structure, right? You're organized, because otherwise you're gonna miss something and you'll be in trouble. Right. Also independence. Right. The fact that I was gone from my family, you know, for a long periods of time ago, uh-huh. you're really independent. So that came in handy when then I moved farther away from them, you know, to America. But also patience. Right. I loved my siblings. I still love them. You know, but I was gone from them, you know, 3 months at a time. My mom and my dad, as you know, I always, you know, would wait for that day, what we called visitation day, when they would come and bring some food, home cooked meals. It's happening once in a period of 3 months. So you're really patient. You learn that patience for when you will see your loved ones again. So that's kind of what shaped me. I mean, I was raised by my family, but you know, my experience in boarding school really shaped who I am today.
So Eric, wow. that's a very unique experience. I can tell you that when I dropped my son off for the first time at pre-K, I was not thrilled that I wasn't going to see him for a handful of hours. Like, this was the first time he was actually away for a handful of hours, let alone 9 months. Or whatever the months long period that you went without seeing your family and looking forward to those visitation days. So you're growing up quickly at a very young age in that setting. But I don't know if you can recall as far back as 7 or even a bit earlier, if you can sort of juxtapose that experience of structure and discipline in the school environment to how life was in your house with your family, your siblings, your brothers and sisters, and mom and dad. Was it as strict, or like, did they prepare you for the boarding school world you're about to jump into, or was it a little bit different?
Oh, 100%. 100%. I don't know if you know about African parents, but they're tough, right? Okay. They're tough. So you got it's almost like you said, they're almost preparing you for that life. But then when you come back, they know the kind of life you've been living. So they expect you to be disciplined, to do the chores, to,
sure,
you know, to be in line. And each and every one of us, you know, you come back home and all your siblings, you're all in line, because otherwise, you know, you're gonna get the spanking that you got in over in boarding school. So definitely, you know, same kind of upbringing. Absolutely.
Okay.
Eric, I imagine, you know, as a 7-year-old seeing your parents drive off, it's a tough situation, but you're thrusted into that environment very quickly.
Yeah,
and you're also surrounded with a lot of other similar children, boys, who are going through the exact same thing. So that bond is probably just developed very quickly. They say that, you know, in hardship, things like war, things like natural disasters, that's where relationships are truly formed and lasting relationships. But I imagine that some of those relationships that you quickly formed as a 7-year-old, those are the ones you're talking about that you're still friends with today because of that environment that you guys went through.
No, absolutely. 100%. Still have friends from back then. And remember, I did boarding school from that age all the way through high school, right?
Okay.
So I joined the university right before before I came to the U.S. But you know, right at that point, I gone to different schools, but met friends, individuals that are still, you know, my friends, my brothers today, all the way through those years of education and different schools.
Huh. Okay. So you're in boarding school until what age?
Let's see, 18, 19.
Okay.
Yep.
And then you said you went to university in Uganda?
Yes. I went to university in Uganda for a brief, I think it was like one semester before I then moved here.
Okay. So I'm working through this timeline, but
yeah.
So you go into a university, but then at some point you decide to travel across the Atlantic to immigrate to the U.S. You land in Colorado to attend university for both your undergrad and your MBA, which both those degrees focus on finance and accounting. So first of all, why leave Uganda at that time? And then why Colorado?
Yeah, so, wow, it's a bit of a long story, but bear with me. Bear with me. So while I was at university, I get an opportunity to apply to a U.S. university. It was actually in Hawaii,
okay.
Hawaii Pacific University.
Yeah,
I was granted admission, and so you know I started planning my journey here, so on a student visa. But I didn't actually go to school right away, and I did not come to Colorado right away, or even okay. go to Hawaii. So at that time, my mom was living in Boston. She'd come to visit some relatives, and so she suggested, "Hey, since you've got a new visa, why don't you come visit here in Boston, and then you can proceed to school after that."
Sure.
Said, "Oh yeah, that sounds fantastic." So the easiest and cheapest way to travel at that time from Uganda to Boston was actually to land at JFK, and then from there take a bus from New York to Boston. Now,
okay.
So I landed on September 11th, 9/11, 1998. So that date is, for obvious reasons, is special to me, but it's extra special because I got quite a welcome to the United States once I landed at JFK. So my mom had instructed me; she gave me clear instructions. She said, "When you get to JFK, you take a yellow cab from the airport to the Greyhound bus station," right? She emphasized the yellow cab. And
okay.
I said, "Okay, yeah, that sounds good." So I clear customs. I'm walking towards the ground transportation. I can see the yellow cabs right outside the door. So I'm walking straight to them. And This guy comes up to me and says, "Hey, you need a taxi?" I say, "Yeah, I need a taxi. I'm going to the yellow cab right there." He says, "No, I have a taxi. I'll take you." And I'm like, "Okay." He grabs my bag and my small suitcase that I had and started walking towards the exit. But we don't go through the exit. We take a sharp right. And go up some stairs and into the parking garage. So he's like, "Oh, this is my car." "Oh, it's not a yellow car, you know?" And He's, you know, remember he's got my little suitcase. He throws it into his car. He's like, oh, have a seat. I sit in the front, passenger seat. And he said, so where are we going? I said, I'm going to the Greyhound bus station, right? And I said, oh, yeah, I'll take you there. And we drive off. So as we drive off, of course, we're driving through New York City, my first time in America, looking at these big, tall buildings. I'm amazed. I'm forgetting about the fact that I'm not in a yellow cab. And here I am, just, just enjoying the scenery, right? But at some point, it hit me, like, wait a minute, it's not a yellow cab. How much is this gonna cost me, right? And so I asked the guy, oh, so how much is this gonna cost me to get to the bus station? He throws out a ridiculous number. I think it says something like $200, okay? My mom told me it should be about $40, $50.
Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh. I don't have that money. So I thought that to myself at first, and then I told him, I don't have that money. He, you know, looks at me very surprised, like, what do you mean you don't have that money? You know, that's what it costs. New York is expensive. And I say, yeah, just coming from Africa. Meanwhile, I'm a tiny, shy guy, like, you know, he was a bigger guy. You know, so I'm instantly scared. I can tell that he's agitated by the fact that I'm probably not going to have enough money to pay him. Thinking about it, I'm sure he had paid some money, you know, however much the fee was for him to park in the garage, and he was, you know, accounting for that and all that, but I could tell he increasingly got agitated. How much do you have? I'm like, I only have enough for me to go from, you know, to pay the yellow cab and go from here, take the bus from New York to Boston. Is that's not a lot. No, it's not. So he's agitated. But meanwhile, as we have this exchange, I can see that in the side of his door, he has a pocket knife. Okay, it was big enough that I could visibly see it. And suddenly, I'm scared. You know, I'd seen Coming to America before. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm about to get taken to the Bronx. I'm going to get stabbed. I'm just, you know. Shaking, but he continues driving, but you can tell he's still mumbling some words himself to himself. And
you're how old, Eric? You're 19 at this time. I'm trying to envision you're coming over an ocean to a new country for the first time. 19-ish years old, you have specific instructions from your mom.
Yeah,
you get in a yellow cab, you're like, nah, I'm going to go in a different direction. And it's hard, right? You don't know. Like, everybody you think is there to be helpful, and this person's there to sort of route you differently. And now you're wild.
So here I am. I'd gotten a gift. My sister had moved to Japan. Yeah. At the time, and she sent me this CD Walkman, the Discman, Sony. Yeah, yeah. It was brand new, really nice. I just thought, top of my head, I'm like, you know what? You know, you can take this. I kind of, you know, sold him on the idea that this is the best thing he could ever have from me. And he looked at it, you know, you could see that he was just slightly impressed. I'm like, oh my gosh, this might not work. So he drives me to the bus station. He's like, let me see your money. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, I pull out my money and he counts it. He takes enough and leaves me with the ticket fare for the bus and just a little for food. Takes the rest. I think he took maybe 120, maybe 150 bucks. And he took the Walkman. And he says, well, there's the terminal, and that's where you go get your ticket. And I was just relieved. I, you know, I just run off and when got my ticket onto the bus to Boston. But I actually didn't tell my mom about this experience. But I could never forget my first day. So now you ask, okay, how did you go from Boston to Denver, not going to Hawaii?
Yeah.
So, like I said, my mom was visiting, and she was gonna go back to Uganda soon. So she'd spoken with a relative of mine that lives here in Denver, and basically talked us out of going to Hawaii. I have a landscaping company here in Denver. Eric can come to Denver. He can work with me, and then go to school from here. I'm sold. I said goodbye to my mom and my relatives in Boston, and took the plane to Colorado. It was nice. It was September.
It's a good month. That's a good month.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then in late October, you know, that first snow hit. And I'd never seen snow, I remember it was a big storm. I did not get out of that house for a whole week, I got out to tap my foot, touch the snow, maybe take a bite, and back into the house, but since then I've called Colorado home. I applied to Colorado Christian University. A little while after I arrived here, I got a soccer scholarship to play at Colorado Christian, and crazy enough, my coach, my teammates will tell you this. I anytime we played in the fall and it was cold and snowy, I would ask for a sub. Coach, I need a sub. It's freezing out here. But I'm also the guy that wore a big jacket when it was 60 degrees outside.
Yeah.
But hey, I've learned to. I don't like snow still, but I love Colorado and all it has to offer. I couldn't substitute it for anything else. I love Colorado. Yeah.
Yeah, in Colorado, you just have to give it a couple days, and the snow will turn to sunshine and milder temperatures, which is always nice.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level. The who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
I'm interested in you went from playing soccer at Colorado Christian, and I understand you then focused your degrees on finance and accounting. Is that correct, Eric?
That's correct, yes.
Why finance and accounting?
Yeah, so I was actually attracted to these fields at an early age. My dad back home had an accounting firm. A few years before I came to the US, I would go work for him, get a little money. There was no computers back then. So we manually balanced the ledger, right? Clients, ledger. So you know, I chose accounting. It was just an easy choice for me once sure. I was accepted to college. But then, so I graduate with my undergrad, and I did, you know, typically you want to go to a big audit firm. Mm-hmm. But I did not do that. I took a different route. Always wanted to be a CPA. So instead of so taking that back, the easiest way to obtain that CPA is by going to an audit firm. You know, get experience there, go sit the exam, and then you're a CPA. Yeah. But because I did not go that route, the alternative for me was to obtain a master's degree with emphasis in finance, corporate finance, and then gain some experience, then sit the exam and gain my CPA. So that's why I decided to do, the master's and emphasize finance and accounting.
Gotcha.
Okay. And yep. with those two degrees, now you jump into corporate America. You don't go the big four, maybe it was the big five accounting firms. Then you decide go, corporate America or non-accounting firm track with startups and some more established companies over the next 20 years. So tell us about that stage of your journey and then some of the things that along the way were, in hindsight, important events that helped shaped you in that professional journey and then where you're at today.
Oh, absolutely. So, of course, I started out as a entry-level staff accountant for a small insurance lead generation company. So small that the CFO at the time who hired me had been the only accountant for the company. But it was growing, so time to bring on a staff accountant. The task was simple enough that he didn't want to bring a controller, an accounting manager. He brought me on, right? And so I learned a lot from sure. this guy. He was a CPA himself. He had worked for one of the big four audit accounting firms. He was a very smart guy, so I paid attention to the way he operated, right? How he communicated, how he analyzed financial results, set expectations. So I would prepare all these, the financials, and he would go present to the executives and once a quarter to the whole company. That was really a key part of producing those financials. The company actually grew from 11 million annual revenue to 80 million in a period of 4 years.
Oh my gosh.
So there was a lot of growth. There was a lot of experience for me. He never hired anybody above me. He kept promoting me. We added a couple more people in the accounting department. But he always just wanted to see me grow and to see me take on bigger tasks. I learned from him a lot. But I was also inspired by the owner of the company. So this was a guy, a selfless guy. He cared so much about his employees and just about everyone. I mean, he shared in his profits. He allowed us to purchase shares in the company. Whenever he knew he was going to sell. He let his employees purchase shares in the company, which is unheard of, right? To this day.
Yeah.
But being around him and just seeing how he ran his company, how he treated us as employees, for me was really inspiring. Keep in mind, I've always had that dream of being self-employed, and I took it in as a lesson on how I would treat my employees once I opened my business. But he sold that company right around the time we hit 85 million. Mm-hmm. Sold it to another financial services company. That company then went on to acquire other companies within the insurance lead generation space, and I was a key part of that process of consolidating and integrating these companies, their financial accounting systems. As I did that, my profile grew a little bit. I got those promotions as a result. Yeah. But then a few years later, I left the insurance lead generation industry and jumped into the mortgage industry. I joined a company as a AVP of finance, the first one, and then got recruited to join another, again, as a VP of accounting. And then my last stop was another mortgage company based out of Chicago, where I was their VP of accounting. So, progressively, yeah. And improving, growing my career. But at some point, I decided to pivot from that.
But it was that first experience with that insurance lead company with an amazing owner who sounds to be like a servant leader to his employees and the community that he serves for his business, that helped you sort of frame your thinking with how you wanted to pursue your life journey. And then, through the course of those career changes in the tech space, you learned M&A, you learned different facets of finance, all mergers and acquisitions, M&A, sorry, sometimes I jump to the acronyms.
Thanks,
for those
Michael.
Who aren't in the business lingo. But all those dimensions you had exposure to in this process probably helped set you up really well for becoming an entrepreneur, your lifelong dream of owning your own business, I would say, no?
Oh, absolutely. And not just from the financial aspect, but also, for other aspects, marketing, business development, project management. And, I worked closely with the leaders in those departments, setting up their own budgets and their departmental P&Ls talking through their, actual versus budget. And so I got exposed quite a bit to the other, departments that then make up a successful company.
Awesome.
So you decide at some point you're going to become an entrepreneur, leave corporate America, and then boom, you're successful, end of story, life's good, here you are today, right? Probably not likely, right? But
right.
You decide you're going to become an entrepreneur. And what's going through your mind as you leave corporate America? Something very safe, something very secure, something that you've continued to rise in the ranks, elevate yourself, do the things that are required to achieve financial and job success and security. You leave it all behind. For what? For a dream to become an entrepreneur? What kind of fed into that idea?
Yeah. So the idea to become an entrepreneur, that's always been in me, right? It actually goes back to my dad and his particular journey. I was inspired by it. So my dad, older guy who went to school back in the 60s, right? And one of the most highly educated individuals in the country at the time, he got successful early in his accounting career. He actually became the commissioner of income tax for the East African community. Like being the head of the IRS for three countries, right? Yeah. So he was successful in that, and he had a really big trajectory going for him, right? And fairly young, and at some point, I don't know under what circumstances this happened, but he got with a couple of his friends, and they decided to purchase a coffee processing plant in Uganda. So they all quit their jobs, purchased this coffee processing plant, and they just started processing coffee and exporting it, right? Sadly, though, they ended up losing the business. They there was a war, and then subsequently some government intervention. Government kind of took over coffee processing and all of that as a key industry in Uganda, and so they lost that. So my dad, instead of going to to apply for jobs, he decided to start his own accounting firm, which he owned and operated throughout the rest of his life. So for me, that was really inspirational. It was, I never asked too many questions about it. Yeah. Never really, like going back to the old upbringing where, in Africa, you don't really talk to your parents about this. She never really encouraged me to be an entrepreneur, but just being around him and seeing his journey. I know they did not succeed in that coffee business, but they'd gotten it to a successful point. It's just circumstances that were out of their control that they lost the business. But then he decided to stay self-employed, right, and do his own accounting firm. So that really put a bug in me to someday do the same, but this time be successful and not lose my business. So
yeah,
I'm not going up against him, but it's in the back of my head.
a little competitive nature there, Derek. I mean, you've piqued my curiosity with going back years in your dad's life, why him and his friends made that decision to start the coffee company. You should ask him. Tell him a friend wants to know. What went through his head in that moment to just say, "Hey, we're going to start a coffee company." We don't need to know the rest of the details, but it's always those moments, those decision moments, that I'm fascinated by.
Right.
And then, so it's in your blood, though, that you're going to be an entrepreneur at some point. And you finally make the leap recently, to jump into entrepreneurship through franchising, something I've personally thought about, only on the surface level, it's intriguing to me because there's some infrastructure and support already there to help you get off the ground. So tell us a little bit about your franchisee journey with Zoom Drain, and what was the catalyst for making that happen? And in this particular franchise, how'd you land on Zoom Drain?
Yeah, no, first and foremost, franchising didn't come across my mind for a long time, in this journey. Those who know me well know that I've come up with some crazy ideas, right? I can't even begin to tell you. As I grew in my corporate journey, I grew comfortable, right? Always had ideas, but it's like, okay, do I give up this to you know, start something that's unproven? Is it even feasible? And do I have, you know, the funds to take this on? But you know, later on in my corporate journey, the latter years, you know, I got to a point, you know, where I was starting to work, you know, more than I was appreciated, right? Yeah. But you know, I was about maybe 38 years old when I decided, you know what, I'm gonna put a time frame on you know, being self-employed. So I said, hey, by the time I'm 45 years old, I want to be, you know, I want to be self-employed, right? Missed by that goal by 1 year, right? I'm 47 today, but missed that goal, but I'm okay with it because I did make it happen. But the catalyst really, like I just alluded, the catalyst was, as you know, as I grew and grew in my corporate life, I started, you know, working harder, working longer hours, no work-life balance. You know, I worked nights and weekends. Sometimes I plan my weekends around work, right? And I'm like, okay, I'm doing a lot of work here, but doing it for somebody else. You know, mm-hmm. I need to, you know, figure something out. You know, and so it was my last gig in Chicago. Really, was kind of a last straw. Now, all this I'm gonna say nothing against, you know, my coworkers that I work with there. Loved these people. I enjoyed my interactions with them, but the job itself, right, was just, for me, it was just too much. I would travel over there occasionally, and you know, I had just a lot of work to do. I mean, I would take off days, like pay time off, just to get caught up. And I would come back the next day and the work had piled, right? So I was growing more and more impatient about you know being self-employed. I was miserable, I would say. So this particular moment I can never forget. Was in November. November of 2022, I'd taken a trip to Chicago to work. I'd been there a week. Typically, I would fly there on a Monday, and you know, jump on the plane back home on a Friday. So this particular Friday morning, I'd gone through the whole week. It had been rough. It had been a rough week at work. And, you know, those of you who know, in Chicago in November, it's rainy, it's cold, windy, you know, and this particular moment, I'm walking 10 minutes from my hotel to the office. And I just remember that rain and wind just blowing into my face. I'm like, why didn't I take an Uber? But it's only 10 minutes. But I'm just, you know, I'm dreading it, to be honest, right?
Yeah,
I'm dreading it. I'm wishing this is, you know, this needs to end soon. I need to figure out something else. Do I polish up my resume and go find something else, right?
Yeah.
Just being miserable. But that day, you know, I leave office. Around midday, I'm driving, riding in an Uber over to the airport, and I get an email from a guy called Phil Harvey. Changed my life, right? Phil is a franchising consultant, right? And in his email, it says, "Hey, I looked at your profile on LinkedIn. I like your journey. I like your profile. Would you be interested in franchising?" And this email, I'm reading it at the airport, right? Before I close my laptop and jump on the plane, I'm like, oh, this is a godsend. This is the answer that I was looking for, right? And I respond right away. I think I said I'm jumping on a plane. I'm interested. Send me some information, right? Chief. And by the time I get back to Denver, he sent me all this information, and so the next week we jump on a call, a video call. Phil was really nice. He made me feel comfortable, walked me through the whole process. And by the way, I didn't have to pay him a dime, right? I'm like, this is great. So follow-ups from that, he sent me five different ideas for franchising. I believe one of them was the mobile pet grooming service. Okay. Which is a big deal here in Denver. The other okay. one was what was it? It was a trash. I believe it was a trash removal company. The other was a tech support services company. I forget the other one. And then Zoom Drain. Right. So of course, you know, I'm looking. You know, I'm vetting all these companies. I'm looking at their pages, all the information that there is to offer. He asked me to select two so we could focus on those two, right? So I selected Zoom Drain and the trash removal company, junk removal. So I went down that road of going through, vetting and validating these two companies. And the longer I went through that, the more, Zoom Drain just kept calling my name. And reason being, that it's an essential service, you know, sure. Yep. You're not going to ignore your drain when it backs up. Okay, you're not gonna ignore your sink whenever you run water and it's just filling up and your garbage disposal is not working anymore. Yeah. And most certainly you're not gonna ignore sewer coming out of your basement, right? So no. it's not to be graphic here, but yeah. but this is essential, right? You're gonna sure. call somebody to do this. I did not mind. Going into this kind of work, had zero experience in it, but over the period that I've known about Zoom Drain, I can talk about drains all day, right? I decided to go with Zoom Drain, and in February of 2023. I quit my job in Chicago and went on a journey to open Zoom Drain, which I did in August of 2023.
Awesome!
Wow!
Congrats! Yep.
Well, I want to ask this, Eric, because getting into a franchise is, there's some hurdles to get into, but a lot of people can find the means to do it or find the resources. And it's a great way to get into a business that's very laid out. It's a lot of the headaches have already been worked through, and it's kind of an off-the-shelf product that you just take and run with and make it your own. But I've got to imagine for you, if you started last year in February, this is a year, so congratulations on your anniversary. But I've got to imagine that there are some huge learnings and some huge steps that you still have to overcome, even as a franchisee, even as the game plan's been handed to you. What are some of those things you've taken out of that this first year?
Yeah, no, absolutely, I can almost tell you that I didn't know what I was getting into. I thought I did. I thought I did, but you know, it's one of those things where you gotta go with the flow, you know, cause you don't know what's coming. You have, or I have a lot of support from, you know, from the franchise. I've gained a lot of knowledge and information on how to run this business, but there is always those you know, proverbial curveballs, right? Just coming at you, and you kind of have to adapt, right? So you know, there's highs, there's lows, right? There is just staying positive, right? So one thing, you know, I've learned is to stay positive, right? Because I've seen it day in, day out when the days have been great, and when the days have not been so great, when we've been rejected, right? When we've submitted a bid and you don't you know, get a response, you follow up maybe 2-3 times and no answer, and you thought that you submitted a reasonable, yeah, you know, a reasonable bid. But some of my friends would tell you, Eric is an emotional individual, right? I take that, right? But I've learned to not take things personally anymore, right? Sure. When you get that no, right? When somebody hangs up on you, I mean, I'd never been a cold caller before. I never made those cold calls, but I have to, right? In my business, I have to make those cold calls, make some connections, and the phone has been hung up on me a few times, right? You know, but then I've had some great conversations with people that have just given me a chance. Right. So that has just told me, hey, just stay positive. Right. Yeah. Things will be all right. And yep. You know, there's that mentality of, hey, there's always another day. Right. There's always another day. Like, forget about what happened today. Let's see what tomorrow brings. You know, even when tomorrow brings a day that you don't like, you know, you just put your head down and work hard, right? And grind it out, you know, because at the end of the day, there's no going back, right? There's no going back for me. I'm committed to what I'm doing, and I'm committed to doing whatever it takes, you know, whatever is under my control to see that I succeed. So far, you know, so far so good. So far I've gotten some wins. You know, going in the right direction.
Yep.
Yeah, Eric, John and I did an episode a while back. I think it was just him and me, and it was called Peaks of Excitement, Troughs of Despair. And I think it pretty much sums up the up and down journey of starting something new, whether it's entrepreneurship or whatever it is in life that you just wanted to take a shot at. But your early lessons shared about staying positive, not taking things personally, learning to do things that you've never done before. I mean, coming out of finance and accounting and jumping into sales and business development, there's not typically a lot of overlap between those worlds. But as a business owner, you need to be fluent in both of those things to make the engine run and for the business to succeed. And so I appreciate you sharing that. And as we start to wrap up, I mean, you've given us a lot to think about, John and me and our audience, about the franchise business and your mindset jumping into the business ownership world. Is there any final thoughts you want to leave our audience with before we start to wind things down here?
Absolutely. I think that I know that a lot of people want to go down this road, the road of entrepreneurship, right? And I think that if it's really what you want to do, then put a time frame on it, right? And set expectations, right? What's your goal?
Absolutely.
And when do you want to achieve this goal? Uh-huh. You know, like I said before, at 38, I said to myself, hey, by the age of 45, I want to be, I want to achieve this goal. Otherwise, I'm not gonna think about it anymore. I'm just gonna go do my corporate thing and you know, hopefully, you know, have a successful rest of my career. But, you know, I thought if I put a plan together, right, and that's the second point, you put a plan around it, right? How are you going to achieve it, right? And how are you going to actually make it feasible, right? So for me, when I decided 45 was the age, I said, okay, looked at my savings, 401k, what do I have at that point? And I started saving like crazy. I said my goal was to get to a point where I had at least 2 years of salary in my bank account. And at this point, my salary, in the bank account, that would help sustain me, through those 2 years of work. So, I think, put a time frame on it, plan around it, and then, I think you seek the support of loved one, your spouse, your just mentors, your support. I'm not saying seek validation, because nobody's going to really understand what your goal is. You're the only one that's going to understand it. But the support I'm talking about is your spouse saying, you know what, go get this done. I got the rest. Right, your friends telling you, hey Eric, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? My friends challenged me. Eric, you're an accountant. You know why why are you going into this drain cleaning business? Why don't you just do your own accounting firm? And call it a day. I said to them, no. I want to get out of my comfort zone. I want to do something completely different. And they then understood that, right? But if I was seeking for validation from them, they probably would have convinced me not to go into what I wanted to go to. Yeah. But and the final point I'll mention is lean on what gives you a sense of purpose and belonging, right? To get too religious here, but for me, it's my faith in God, right? I believe in God. I believe that my journey, I wouldn't be where I am without the grace of God. It might be somebody else's position on that. But whatever it is that gives you that sense of belonging, you lean on that because in the business world, especially when you're starting out during those tough days, you need to lean on something, right?
Yep.
Something that's gonna give you that courage to get up and go again and do it tomorrow. For me, it's my faith in God. Could be something different for somebody else, but whatever it is, tap into it and believe, have belief that you can get it done. So that's kind of my spiel there on that. But appreciate it.
I love that, Eric, and I love the differentiation you made between belief in yourself or somebody believing in you and validation.
Yeah.
Because I've transitioned, as Michael's transitioned, sometimes it doesn't make sense to the people around us what we choose to do. But some of those people have said, you know what, John, I don't know the direction you're going, but I believe in you. I believe in your work ethic. I believe in your mindset. I believe in your determination. And that's what you had. And that's what I think is very important between attempting to do something and succeeding and attempting to do something and maybe fizzling out before you taste success. It's that support system that you've got behind you.
Right.
That belief that you've got what it takes, because it's not always going to make sense to those around us. And so,
100%.
Eric, I know you're living your dream now, and I know that you truly believe after your journey from Uganda to Boston to Colorado, in and out of, you know, different fields now as a franchisee owner, you know nothing is impossible as long as you put your best foot forward and you try and you don't let those factors around you determine your outcome of success. And that's a testament to putting in the work and figuring out how to make things happen. So kudos and congratulations on your 1 year anniversary as a franchisee owner. But I know, Eric, that we've got a couple of listeners that are probably interested in their own route as an entrepreneur, as a franchisee. And so for those people that want to get in touch with you, they've heard your story now and they think, man, if he can do it, maybe I can do it. If they want to find you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I am on LinkedIn, Eric Baliruno. You can find me on there. Hey, give me a call, right? Give me a call, 720-547-8080. Let me repeat that, 720-547-8080. Send me a text. I'm willing to, to help guide whoever would like some assistance on that. Because, I think paying it forward is a good thing. And definitely willing to do that for anyone.
I love that. I love that you would be willing to give out your phone number, because we always talk about here on the show, about our mentors and then about giving back to the people that are behind us. And you're truly putting your phone number where your mouth is and practicing what we always preach. And so you're willing to take people at random and teach them the things that they need to know to be successful, just like you have shown over the last 40 plus years. So, man, I truly appreciate that. And it means a lot. So thank you on that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome. Eric, this has been a lot of fun. Hearing your story, some details I didn't know too much about, but loved talking through it, giving us and our audience a window into your life. And John and I certainly wish you all the best, and we'll be sure to include the links to your information in the episode, including a link to Zoom Drain on our page, so people want to get in touch with you if they have drain issues, we'll help promote your business that way for you.
Absolutely.
But we look forward to reconnecting with our audience again next week. And if there's nothing else, we can say see ya.
All right, Eric. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. Really appreciate it. And I enjoyed talking to you.
All right. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
We'll see you later.
See you,
Michael.
The Second Act with Michael and John stars Michael Newborn and John Ballinger. The podcast is produced by Seltzer Kings. For more information on the show, check out michaelandjohn.com. Or if you'd like to get involved in the conversation, give the guys a shout on their socials at The Second Act with Michael and John on most platforms. Thanks for listening.